Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss, Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss. The Brothers.
You're now listening to Greg. It's the Brothers
Wiss. Hey, everybody. This is Greg Soule with the Brothers Wiss number 69. I can't believe we've been doing it this long. Oh, man. I see the pun there. Anyway, today we have Mike Hammett from Chicago.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Excellent. And then we've also got Davey from L.A.
How you doing?
Well, I guess that's Los Angeles, not Louisiana. I don't want people to confuse you.
Or Latin America.
Yeah.
Latin America. I don't think anyone ever called Louisiana or Latin America L.A.
I don't know. It is what it is. All right. Let's jump right in. Let's knock it out. First things first, thank you to our wonderful sponsor, Sonar. Sonar software, scalable, intuitive, comprehensive, does your automatic billing, will manage users. So if you're doing, say, like DHCP, you're doing, I guess, Radius authentication, all of that stuff, it will automatically bill those customers, disconnect them, push out rate plans, does all the magic for you. One of the biggest and best. Go check them out at sonar.software. All right. Next thing to talk about are the new patrons. We've got Logan Freeman. He's a local here, actually. I've met that cat. Don Spaulding, Rob Darcy. It's like D apostrophe R-C? Darcy? I'm saying that right. And then just Isaac. I guess he's, you know, he's like Cher. No last name.
I'm thinking it's probably the guy that started the Wisp Talk group on Facebook. He's a Wisp in Southern Illinois.
Oh, wicked. All right. So a little bit of front matter, which for you guys that don't listen to podcasts a lot, that's basically catch up stuff from last week. You know, just put it up there in the front. A little GFast information, because I'd kind of thrown it out to the group and asked everybody, the brain trust, what they thought about it. Somebody told me Calyx has their iteration of it, E3 series. And I actually did look, and Calyx does have a lot of information on it with product videos. And so I clicked the product video, and it was all about CenturyLink, talking about how awesome CenturyLink is. It never even talked about their hardware at all. But I'm assuming since it's on the Calyx page, that means they're using the Calyx equipment.
I've heard a lot of good feedback from people using their Calyx's in-home Wi-Fi stuff. It's like it integrates with their whole ecosystem for DSL, GPON, so on. But there's a lot of Wisps that use it simply because RF is great. It has a great cloud management thing, and lots of Wisps have gotten into the they have a repeater device you can put out there that, you know, extends the signal kind of. I don't know if it does it over power lines or if it just does like a Wi-Fi repeater, but everybody who uses it swears it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. They're just a little bit pricey.
Yeah.
But they get their customers into like a managed Wi-Fi service. And it actually it ends up costing less than what, you know, Comcast charges you just to have the modem to, you know, receive their service. But I mean, you know, they charge them $5 or $10 a month, $15 a month extra for this managed Wi-Fi, and everybody loves it.
Wicked.
What is it? Who would be a competitor of their product?
This particular one, I'm not exactly sure. Like an Amplify maybe or something like that, from Ubiquiti. But they build, you know, ADSL, VDSL, GPON, infrastructure.
Yeah. I think it also extends to coax plant too, right?
GFast does, yeah. I don't know if Calyx does.
Yeah, I saw it on their product page. They mentioned it in there. Andrew Cox said some of the main players he's looked at so far are Calyx, Nokia, and Huawei as well.
I saw AdTrend has a product, but they've been around forever. I hate their switches because, you know, I'll tell you about the bad stuff before I tell you about anything good. But I don't like their switches. I wonder if that same awfulness has carried over into their G.fast product. Has anyone used it? Anyone hear anything about it?
Nah, I haven't used it. But you know what that reminds me of is somebody told me one time, if you like a product, you'll tell one person. If you hate a product, you'll tell 10 people.
I learned that working at the Wiz back in like 98.
It's true, man. Yeah. All right, let's see what else. Andrew gave me a little update, Andrew Cox, that is, on co-working spaces. He said he's done some consulting work for a few folks that are using Nexodus. That's N-E-X-U-D-U-S. It looks like kind of a co-working space platform that does the billing, the scheduling, all that stuff, and I guess integrates into MikroTik, which is kind of neat. I've heard of a platform before that also, I think it integrated phones in there as well. So, like, when you got into the co-working space, it would assign you, like, a phone for the day and all that stuff. So, it's pretty neat. I'm not sure if that one does it, but that was sort of the front matter. You guys ready to get...
I wonder if, like, that co-working space sharing a phone thing, I wonder if, like, on the back end, if you could kind of mingle, like, a, you know, hot desk feature into being, like, a multi-tenant, you know... Because hot desking is where, you know, some people share the same, or multiple people share the same desk. Within one business, I would think you could extend that out to supporting people across multiple businesses.
Yeah, I remember the one I saw, I can't remember what it integrated with. It was either like 3CX or maybe just free PBX, but what it would do is it would, so normally with that hot desking, you'll get like a four-digit code you punch in and it configures the phone for you, and so it would basically just assign you one of those as you are good to go.
With hot desking, though, it's going to be, yes, like you said, it's going to be a feature of the PBX that you're using. So I don't know if Nexodus will have that built in or what, but I can tell you that hot desking, I use it with my customers. So far, the only phones that I know of that are compatible that I've actually used and seen is Yealink, Polycom, Obahai. It is not at all compatible at all whatsoever with Cisco. Don't know why. I think Cisco's code is very old, even though it's incredibly, incredibly solid. Never had an issue with Cisco phones at all, but not compatible with Cisco. So yeah, that would be a function of the PBX. When you log into it, by the way, it will reboot your phone. So that does take a little bit of time, but. That's all I have to say about that for now.
All right. Well, while we're here, we might as well talk about it. I saw Mike was popping up a question about, you know, what phones do people like, you know, and there you are, you hit it off. And something he put in there really struck a chord with me. He said, or maybe somebody else said it, I can't remember. I'm trying to give you the credit, Mike. He said, I don't want to deploy a phone that feels cheap. And I'm doing air quotes here. It feels cheap. Yeah. And I think we've all been there before, right? Like you have... a product, say, case in point, the MikroTik 750, right? It feels like a cheap piece of crap. Just because, you know, you think network and robust infrastructure's got to have some heft to it, you know? And that
it's
makes me think
iron.
Of,
it's got to be metal cased.
I mean, like the 7960 phones have, I think the handset has like a steel bar inside the handset just to make it feel weighty. Have you ever taken one apart? So,
I haven't.
Right? It's perception is reality a lot of times, right? So if something feels good, then it is good. And somebody on the Facebook thread said, you know, that basically like a phone, if you give a customer a desk phone, this is a representation of your company every time they pick that up. So if that handset feels cheap or say the rest on the back, you know, flops down too much, which I've had with some Cisco phones as they get old, you know, that stand, that kickstand on the back sort of wears out. You know, if there's a perception of this thing's a piece of junk, then your service is a piece of junk, you know, even if it's a great phone and works solid, right? I thought that was really interesting that, I think a lot of people don't think about that. And you can extend that to Wisps. Like if your install looks like shit, then your service is trash. You know what I mean? So the devil's in the details when it comes to that stuff.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You know, 15 years ago, I bought handsets from probably a dozen different companies. And I hear most of them have gotten much better since then. But, you know, I was buying from just random Chinese companies. I think ATCOM was one of them I bought just because it had EEX support versus SIP. And I was all, you know, big asterisk guy. And, you know, I'll use EEX for everything because it's great. And it is. But it only works on one platform and nobody else supports it. No, but then, you know, Grandstreams and Snoms and this and this and this and this and this. And like, a lot of them had various functionality defects. All of them felt cheap. And then I bought a Polycom.
Oh, yes.
I was like, let's raise the bar. Like, maybe everything is shit because I'm, not spending $60 on a phone. So I spent $200 on a phone. I'm like, this is a nice phone. And I've never had, that Polycom died at some point, and I don't know what wrong. It was in storage for a little while. I brought it back, and it didn't work anymore. Hmm. So I don't know, but its replacement, which I've had for probably 10 plus years, it's just as much of a phone as it was 10 years ago. Functionality, button response. Push it, it still feels fresh. The handset feels solid. I'm just going to buy Polycoms. I'm not going to buy anything else. But then people have been really pressing on, some of these other brands. And I guess they've, in 15 years, they've made their product better. Yealink, I've never even heard of Yealink. I'm not going to buy no cheap, random Chinese, whatever. But it's gotten really popular.
Well, that's primarily because the big Walmarts of voice over IP has started pushing Yealinks. Yeah, but go on.
Baltic has one that's $37 brand new. I'm like, that's one you can put in a place, and if it gets wrecked, you don't care. But the T46, I think, was one that people were really, fond of. And it's $140-some.
Yeah.
About the same price as a Polycom. Still $20 cheaper than a Polycom VVX300.
Yeah, but there's a big difference.
It's a color phone and all these other features the Polycom doesn't have.
Yeah.
But I was looking at what's the cheapest Polycom I can get? Because I know it's a solid phone. And then
the VVX300 is $100, right?
I don't remember the exact numbers of which model number was which price, but I remember, there was one that was around that area, and I was like, oh, so it's, it's cheaper than the Polycom, but it has a lot, by a little bit, but it has a lot more stuff.
Yeah.
But the important thing is, how the handset feels, and everybody that has had the 46 says it feels solid, so.
Yeah. For me, it comes down to two things. Is the handset, is it clear, right? Is the call quality clear? And then how good is the speakerphone function? Because I've used some where the speaker was just crap or the mic wasn't good enough. So I could hear them just fine, but they just couldn't hear me. And that's problematic because, a lot of times I'm typing, I'm clacking away. So I'd rather not have the phone crooked on my neck for 15 minutes while I'm trying to do all that stuff.
Yeah. And for me, it's interesting how you said in the beginning that note totally hit home when you said people, the way they perceive the product is a representation of your service. And funny enough, when I started doing VoIP, I tried obviously different phones just like everyone else. And then I came across Cisco, and it's around the same time that TV series 24 was on. And in 24, Cisco really plugged that show, and every time they were on the phone, it was Cisco. You saw Cisco, everywhere.
Yeah, you'd see the back of the phone, and the Cisco logo was 10 times what it normally would be right there. I noticed that same thing, yeah.
So, and that's around the time I said, let me try these Ciscos. And funny enough, I started offering them to customers. They really loved it, because they're like, oh, this is the one I see on TV. And I'm like, yeah. So that's really why I went with Cisco. But surprisingly, this is just me. I really love Cisco the most out of any phone. It does have that one drawback where you can't do hot desking. So my number two is going to be Yealink, because the way you perceive the phone, that's like first impression. On a date or a job interview, the first 5 seconds someone looks at you, they're in their head going to put together a makeup of what they think you are. So if you come in and you're 3 feet tall, they're going to perceive certain things about you. Or if you're bald with a beard and 6 feet tall, they're going to think something else about you.
So New York douche. Got it. Yeah.
Let's do shots, bro. All right. So, but after that first impression, You know, that's when you have to actually start using the product. And that's where I found a couple of things that I really strongly suggest my customers have. If they don't have it, I just warn them and tell them, look, you're going to have to remember codes, and you're going to have to remember, like, *399 is for paging and *71 is for forwarding, and nobody wants to remember that stuff. So I always say, no matter what phone you get, just, you know, try to get an attending console to go with it. If you don't want to pay the extra fee for the attending console, then, you know, Yealink is a great option because, like you said, the T46, now, by the way, there's a T46G and a T46S, and there's a big, huge difference. Not usability-wise, I'll get to that later. But when you get the T46, you're getting 10 BLF buttons, and that's great. I mean, two of them are going to be, you know, used by your extension. But still, then you get two pages on it, so you can toggle between pages.
What's a BLF button, by the way?
BLF is just blinking light function. Basically, you can program the phone. Let's say if you program it to be someone's extension. So that button will have a light next to it. And if it's an extension that you program the button to be, when the person is not on the phone, which is the default, all those buttons will be green. And when they're on the phone, that button will turn red. So BLFs give you...
Think like the old, you know, old school, like Nortel phone systems where every phone had a button and, you know, it was on or off.
It's just like the Cisco phones. It's just when you throw an acronym like that, nobody knows what you're talking about.
Yeah, and the funny thing is
on the Cisco ones, though, it's like for, like, you know, your couple of extensions, but like BLF is normally more for like all like lines and like parked calls and things like that versus just like, you know, your couple extensions you have.
Gotcha. I guess they can also double as speed dials.
Sure. Yeah.
It's nice.
Or I think most phones, you can make them do whatever you want pretty much anymore.
Well, that's all it's going to be. It's either going to be a park, which is just transferred to an extension, a BLF of an extension, or a speed dial. Sometimes they make them feature codes, which you wouldn't need a light for, because like paging, why do you need a light for paging? You're either paging or you're not. Yeah. You know, little things here and there like that, like when you want to, some people want to manually close their company, or, you know, night hours after hours greeting, they'll push a button. So you can program it to be pretty much anything, any feature on the system you could program a button for. But primarily the BLFs are typically with that light there is for is to let you know if someone is occupying that extension. It's basically it. But that comes into play with usability. So Cisco's, again, great. Their footprint is kind of big. I tell people to get like the 504, the 514, which is just a gigabit connection instead of 100 megabit, and the attendant console. Like together, both of them, the phone and the attendant console, when I check them on Amazon, typically, funny enough, both run about $70, the phone and the attendant console. So you're at the same price point as like a T46. And just as a side point, the T46S, which is different from the G, the S has, for some reason, is compatible with hearing aids that are Bluetooth. Yeah, because I had to research that for a customer. A customer's employee who was kind of like legally deaf or whatever, he had hearing aids, and I had to research which one is going to work. And I went through a lot of phones. And the documentation doesn't really advertise, hey, we're hearing aid compatible, because obviously it's not the first thing people look for. But the S is compatible with Bluetooth hearing aids, anything with the S, so the T42S, the T46S, hearing aid compatible, just throw that out there.
So is it like hearing aid specific, or is it just Bluetooth compatible?
No, there's a big difference apparently between Bluetooth, just like, you know, those Bluetooth little earpieces that you put on. I guess that standard is kind of common, but for some reason, and I forget who made it, I should probably find out, but I think it was Siemens. Yeah, Siemens makes a hearing aid that's Bluetooth, and yeah, that was not compatible with any Bluetooth phones that I've tried. And I've tried, I think, four different ones, my four major ones, you know, but the only one that worked was the Yealink that I found. There might be others. But the one that I found was any Yealink T whatever ending with the letter S. So 42S, 46S. That was a nice thing. And then the freaking customer, that employee got fired right after I figured it out. So all that worked for nothing. So, yeah.
Well, not for nothing, because now we know.
Yeah, exactly.
For sure, that's cool.
Cool. The more you know.
Nice.
All right, you guys want to bust through some MikroTik updates?
Oh, yeah.
All right, so they just released 6.43RC17 for the WAP60Gs. It added a fourth 802.11D channel. So the 60 gigahertz stuff now has four channels to work with. So four individually selectable channels and then auto, right? So you can just have it automatically.
And that fourth channel has a bit less oxygen loss than the others. So in what 60 gig is available currently, that's the longest reach channel. 5 gig or 2.4, you don't think of which channel gets to be the most range, but there's a pretty good difference in 60 gig, which channels go how far.
Yeah, that's what somebody sent me a message about, saying that it's not necessarily the hydrogen molecules there, it's the oxygen molecules that are causing you problems.
Yep.
Yeah. Is that a real thing? That's a real thing.
Yeah, evidently.
Wow, that's cool. So when you said oxygen loss, you were being literal.
Yeah, that's trippy. Yeah.
Wow, yep. I thought that was just like some industry term that people use, because, my God, that's...
And 24 gig is big on water vapor or water in general, which is why your microwave runs on 2.4, because it's a...
Water resonates at 2.4, right?
Yeah. And so, 24 it will as well. And then, 60 gig, its big thing is oxygen. So an 80 gig link actually goes longer than a 60 gig link, because 80 gig is not affected by the oxygen as much.
Wouldn't that be a function of how many channels you're using?
Gigahertz,
80 gigahertz.
The size of the wavelength, yeah.
That's
interesting.
All right. Water and oxygen and stuff. I'm going to try to draw it looking at my screen. So, those little wavelengths of, how, frequency versus loss. Mm-hmm. There's been a bunch of, nerdy people 50 years ago that did experiments for years in different channels, and I actually didn't read because it was really dry. I skimmed through a white or work one time. It was 20 pages on the different types of rain in different regions of the world, not how much rain per hour, but the different type of rain drop, and mathematically determining, temperatures and rain rates and regions and altitudes, how that affects the shape of the raindrop, and then how that affects RF.
That's crazy.
Well, that guy definitely never got laid. I can tell you right now.
There's a ton of stuff out there. I mean, obviously it's really dry, but that's why I was building my little wireless calculator in Google Sheets. I was trying to figure out, how can I mathematically, figure out what the loss is. And I looked at the equations. I'm like, nope, I'm just have a table that says this frequency is this. And I'm just see what somebody else already did. I'm not going to try to do the math. That's way too hard.
Yeah. So just as a little anecdotal story, we were running fiber across the street to a customer, and the fiber run was so short that none of the big boys wanted to do it. And none of the regional guys, because there just wasn't enough work, so there wasn't enough money in it for the regional guys to come in. So it took me a while to finally get somebody to actually come and put the fiber across the street. So in the interim, I threw up a WAP60 and one of the 60Gs. And the IT guy for that company was very hesitant. He's like, dude, you can't do a Wi-Fi link over to me. And I was like, it's not Wi-Fi, dude. It's, I was just trying to explain that. And so finally, it took us a month and a half to get that fiber across and lit up. I actually lit it Friday. And the guy was like, this is pretty okay.
Yeah, because they don't have to pay a loop charge, right?
Yeah, well, We eventually, we're transitioning off the wireless link over to the fiber. Probably on Tuesday, I said, I know it's ready today, but don't do it today, dude. This is like a three-day weekend. I really don't want to come out here and jack with it. You know, it's like I'm supposed to be off for Memorial Day. Don't ruin it for me. But yeah, so it's... I don't know why some people are still just, you know, they have the idea of Wi-Fi stuck in their heads. But these WAP 60s, they have been super solid for me. I'm really enjoying these things.
So, nice. Good.
Anyway, let's move on to some more MikroTik news. There was a botnet called VPN Filter that just hit not too long ago. A lot of different manufacturers in there. The first news article I saw said Cisco announces blah, blah, blah. Well, it's because it's Linksys gear that's getting compromised, not technically Cisco stuff. But MikroTik made the list. They're getting famous.
Yeah, I saw that. Saw that in my feed.
They said it was like a 500,000 node botnet. MikroTik officially responded on it, and they said that it was plugged in those previous vulnerabilities, right? So if you have the newest, or they believe, they said all the information that was delivered to them, they believe that it's that hole has been plugged. And
a year and a half ago.
Yeah, so if you're using default firewall policies and all the right things, and you're up to date, you should be safe.
Yeah, they said they fixed it in version 6.38.5 in March of 2017.
There you go.
That's what they said. And you know, one person in the only place that was released is actually in the message board that I found. I did get something in my Google News feed that said that the VPN filter was there, but I don't remember seeing MikroTik making an official statement. So someone in the forum actually had a very good point. He's like, why isn't this on your front page of your website? You know, you have to go and dig through the forums and Google search just to try and find it. So I thought that was a good point. And by the way, does anybody know what the VPN filter, and by the way, from what I understand, it has nothing to do with VPNs. That's just the name of the malware, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
From what I understand.
Yeah, it's, I think it was just some text they found in the source code, and that was just like, oh, let's just call it this.
Didn't they say due to like the signatures, they thought it was based on like a state actor was doing it, probably Russia? Isn't that what they said?
I think so. I think that was this one. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds right, doesn't it? And to your point about, you know, do they put it on their front page? I bet if you go to Linksys.com, there's nothing on the front page that says,
"Yeah, it's
hey,
bad advertising." But MikroTik isn't like a company like Linksys. Their philosophy is completely different. So. You know, I just thought that might be a good idea. I don't know,
if you were signed up for the newsletters or anything like that, maybe do but you know what? They've already pushed. They sent that email out. Remember that said that, hey, that we've noticed there's these big scannings going through on 30.
Yeah, that was the port vulnerability.
Previously. So if you had updated then, you're protected now. So.
And it's so weird. It just came into the news now, even though they fixed it like over a year ago.
That's the way it always happens, man. It was the exploit, when the exploit's first, you know, like identified, there's a big, you know, rabble rouse about it. But then as soon as people actually start exploiting it and nobody had updated, well, then, yeah, hell, you know. There's the same thing with Ubiquiti, right, Mike? Where there was that big exploit.
Yeah, it was in, I think, May. I think 2 years ago, and like it was patched in July the year before, and like, you know, the patch, what, like, you know, in the, like, in the release notes, it talked about, you know fixes major, you know, HTTP vulnerability, blah blah blah, and nobody, like, it, I can say nobody did it, but you know, tons and tons of people didn't do it. You know, I actually had two radios that I had missed. I caught them in between when they were infected and you know, when they actually, you know, ruined the box. But you know, just tons and tons, like entire wisps of thousands and thousands of customers, they're all wiped out within 24 hours because they just didn't know.
I remember there was a big initial hit where tons of people got infected, and then what was it, like a month or two later, there was another big wave that came through and other people were getting, so it's like, man, you know. I guess they just have their head down in the dirt. Otherwise, I mean, because if you had listened to our podcast or anybody else's podcast, or if you'd been on any of the WISP Talk groups or I mean, anything on Facebook, you would have seen it.
Like in the first one, it's like, okay, you know, maybe you had a couple that were missed. You know, maybe you had a firewall rule that what, you know, that you thought was doing this and it, you know, it leaked something through. You know, the first one, okay, I'll give you a pass, even though you really should have figured it out. The second one, or the third one, or the fourth one on the same vulnerability, it's like, I no longer feel sorry for you. You deserve it.
You compromise. I don't know about deserve it, but yeah, I quit feeling bad for those guys. So
you can feel bad. I will say deserve.
Funny thing about MikroTik is whenever I submit a legitimate bug, like the last bug I discovered was the one with VRRP, because like I'm using VRRP in my data centers, and man, that was not fun. I install it, and all of a sudden the backup is the master and the master is master. So it really threw a curveball, and I was ripping my hair out, because when you first start using MikroTik, you get schooled real quick. You learn how little you know, or how you've been working with routers that have pretty buttons and click here and it sets everything up for you. So I was still in, you know, I've been schooled from that experience. So I kind of learned to trust the MikroTik and doubt myself before I say it's a bug. So when I submit a bug, I'm like, I am 100% sure this is a bug. With the VRRP, they were pretty good about getting back about it, but I'm sure that was a simple fix. That wasn't exactly a hack. That was just an error in their code. And the one before that was the ARP problem, where they had ARP resolution problems, and that pretty much took down all my customers' phones, so I had to downgrade them immediately until MikroTik figured out what the problem was.
Yikes.
Yeah, and again, they fixed that pretty quick, but when it comes to hacks, man, you know those Russians, they're pretty damn good. Right? They did our elections real nice, so
well,
you gotta give them credit where credit's due.
Who's it? Cambium, their Elevate stuff. It's actually the guy that's the lead on that program is a Russian guy. And
Russian.
They hired him because he had found some exploits for Cambium stuff and sent him notices over. So technically they hired a Russian hacker.
Nice. Well, that's the best way to get hired. Hack into your stuff. Be like,
well, I mean, think about what Elevate's doing. It's reverse engineering other people's stuff so that, you know, the Cambium code can load up. So, I mean, what better, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think everybody's reverse engineering everyone. Nobody really has. I think you can't even patent software anymore. So, yeah, everyone's just reverse engineering stuff, right?
Or even if you could, it's not worth your time.
In Texas, you patent everything.
Yeah.
Well, what? Everyone spoke at the same time.
But East Texas District, whatever, you can you can patent everything. You can patent other people's patents.
Yeah, there's some county around here or whatever where all the patent trolls actually go to court there because
that's right.
There's apparently some
that.
I don't 100% know, but I know a lot of
lawyers and the lawyers that are suing everyone for their patents. The father is like a judge, a patent lawyer, judge or something. Yeah, who knows. I wanted to say something about when you were talking about frequencies and wireless and all this and that. And you know, I'm obviously not the man when it comes to wireless. So, you know, I've dabbled in it. I have a few point to point ubiquity links. The longest one I have is like what I think 18 miles. Nothing super impressive. But one thing that really helped me that you don't really learn this from. Just going through wikis or reading manuals or anything like that is the actual physics of wireless. And the only time I started to really learn and appreciate and love it and didn't realize how much it's related to everything else in technology, anything that has a frequency is all in this book. So I became ham radio certified and the ARRL ham radio license manual. So the first half of the book is all physics of wireless and frequencies really for that matter. Because you get frequencies on Ethernet, you get frequencies from light, you get frequencies in sound, though it's a pressure wave. But that really answered all the questions I ever had since I even got involved in technology. So we all know how to configure things. We all know basically what's going on and how to make things work, right? But actually understanding what's happening on the wire, understanding what's happening with wireless in the air, that it's half electricity. So it's an electromagnetic wave and how those are created and oscillations and how oscillating waves are created. all that stuff was in the first ham radio license book you can do. It's very basic, and they go through the basics of it. And it's just called the ARRL, Ham Radio License Manual. I could say it totally opened my eyes, and it really applies to everything technology, at least network engineer, not programming. But if you're going to be a programmer for this kind of things, then you need to understand how the physics of this stuff.
So did you read the book, or did you actually go all the way through and get the certification?
Oh, I got the certification. I am a ham radio operator.
Nice.
It's nothing glorious, but it's more for emergency stuff, you know, and a little bit of hobby fun. Now I get to find another hobby to spend some money on, because I already have enough. Everyone knows that. But yeah, I got the certification. It was pretty easy. And the people that you meet at the classes, because apparently the classes are free, at least in my area. And I mean, some of the guys that I met there are just seasoned professionals. There, one of the teachers was—he was designing his own chips, semiconductors, for a company which he can't say because it's probably all top secret stuff. I mean, it's all aerospace guys, you know. Every hobby I have, I'm the youngest guy. I don't know why, but yeah, some of the people you meet and the questions that they can answer for you that your typical wireless people can't answer. I just thought it was a blast. And actually, my next year's mum's speech, if I have the guts and the time, really, is going to be about the physics of wireless. And that's something I'm scared to get into, because you wireless guys know your stuff. So, well, you know,
every now and then you got somebody out in the crowd that's going to ask you some hard questions.
But you know, on the other side, in any crowd, you're going to find people that this is all new information to.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, they just haven't done it.
Yeah, we'll see.
It's a balance.
What's next? Yeah, what's next on our list of fun?
The list of stuff. I've got the. I don't know how this one slipped by me. I just didn't see it at all. But there's a new Microtik. It's the Hex S. So it's a 5-port. So, I mean, it's the same form factor as the standard Hex. They're showing the case as being gray, which actually looks pretty nice. I like it. I actually like the gray color better than the white. Sort of, I don't know, looks more
less
industrial.
Cheap?
I don't know. I didn't want to say that. It looks more kind of industrial, you know what I mean? Anyway, it's PoE out on the 5th port. It's got an SFP slot. It's actually got an SD card slot. I think it's got 256 gigs of RAM, dual core, 880 megahertz proc, and
wait,
it's got
256 gigs of RAM.
Megs. I'm sorry.
I was saying, like, that's a hell of a router. I'm gonna.
Yeah, 256 megabytes of RAM. I'm sorry, my brain farted there for a second because I was trying to pull that out of my head. And it's got IPsec hardware acceleration as well.
Ah, perfect. That's the key right there. That separates the routers from other routers. Like, their HAP AC squared costs like what, $40-$45, and it's got that IPsec hardware accelerator chip, which if you're doing IPsec is kind of important to have, because the throughput on any other router, I think we saw it all in Giannis's speech, is just so little that they don't even post those statistics on the product page for IPsec throughput.
They're saying the suggested price on this thing's about $70, so we'll see it for, I don't know, 60, I guess.
Yeah. So, but how does this differ from the HAP AC squared?
Which actually there's no wireless in it.
No wireless. It has an SFP. It has an SD.
SFP. Oh, yeah. Wow.
It's got an SD card. You know, interesting enough, if you look at the case design, it's actually got two buttons on the side. One says mode and one says reset. So it's got a dedicated reset button now.
Oh, that's so bad. Everyone's going to be resetting. Doesn't work. Reset. You know,
I'm just curious what a mode button would do on this thing.
Well, let's ask Google. Though the architecture is MIPS. I mean, isn't that a little bit of they're trying to phase away from that and go to their ARM stuff?
I thought they were, but I guess not.
Yeah, apparently. But, maybe they just had...
You know, I would like to see it be a little easier. Somebody, I think, at one of the mums said that they have that capability. to, you know, have the firmware on the router so that, you know, the reset button, you know, just goes back to whatever you as the administrator want it to be. You know, my client, I'm doing a whole lot of DSL and voice stuff for, one of their vendors, Comtrend, you know, you get the, you know, any firmware version you're looking for, you know, oldest one, newest one, that's generic, install it on your hardware, configure it how you want, you export the configuration, you fill out like a Word document that says, you know, just answers, you know, just ask a bunch of questions, stuff like, you know, what format do you want the SSD to be in, you know, what do you want the default password to be based on, you know, all these questions. They run it through their, you know, automation, and then they spit out in an FTP server, like your firmware that has all these options you want there by default. So they can reset it how many times they want back to default, and it goes back to what you want it to be.
I know a lot of people have been asking for that, in particular ISPs and WISPs.
Yet, which, I mean, it doesn't sound that complicated. You know, they have all the firm, you know, all the utilities there. Just take the default, or you know, take the config file, import it in. You know, run it through a couple, you know, Python, Perl, whatever scripts you want to, you know, muck the other settings in, and you dump out a compiled version.
Well, I know Micah take. You can do your own default config so that if they hold the reset button, it'll go back to your default. But you have to, like, you have to push it with, what's that thing called?
Net install.
Yeah, inside of there. So it's kind of a pain in the butt. I wish from a booted MikroTik you could adjust that default config. God, that would make life so easy. Like, to be able to script that, it would be so much easier.
You know, there was a company over at the last month, they claimed to be able to do that remotely. And I don't know how, but they claimed it was possible. Yeah. So I don't know if anybody knows about that. Nick was asking the guy about that. Nick Arenello or something, you know, the long hair heavy metal guy. Yeah. He came out with us that night when Baltic was, you know, flipping the bill for everyone to eat. So, yeah, and the kid wasn't an engineer. He seemed more like a salesperson for the company than an engineer. So I don't think he was able to fully explain it.
Oh, shoot, that guy! I know you're talking about. Let's not get into that. into that one.
We know that MikroTik watched this, so MikroTik, we formally invite you to give us feedback on that.
Wouldn't it be great if we could get Giannis on the show? Wouldn't it be awesome?
I haven't asked him before. He can't do it.
He'll give us one-word answers. Yes, no. No, actually, all his answers will be no, no, no.
No. I don't think he's... we'll never see him on here.
No.
All right.
If we keep Tom long enough off of the show, we might be able to get somebody else on.
Yeah, Tom's given up on us.
I saw him using some agricultural equipment on Facebook. Like, what happened? What the fuck?
I don't know. Maybe he's getting into politics. You know,
I think that's when people. He went to visit Pat in Florida.
Oh, okay. Because Pat works for U.S. Sugar. So
he was on some huge machinery.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Because I think
it's not that impressive.
Pat did a presentation at one of the MUMs on his network he built that supports just the U.S. Sugar, and so they've got all these gigantic tractors that are all like self GPS driving themselves, and it helps track and send data back and forth and all that stuff. It's pretty neat.
Holy shit! That sounds like some. You're not impressed, but hey, I've never sat in a machine that big. All right.
Well, that's because I live on a farm and I have those machines, so that's why I'm not impressed.
That's so cool. What's it? Farmers with technology. What the hell is the world coming to? We're changing that paradigm, buddy.
If I don't know too many farmers that have a diverse conduit ring on their farm.
How about this? I don't know a farmer, period.
Hey, dude, he's right there.
Yeah, exactly. Now I know one.
Yeah, there you go.
What do you farm?
We've got about 2,000 acres of corn and soybeans. My dad's got about 2,400 pigs. My sister's farm, she's got about 3,500, I think. And my brother, he has about, I think, 30, 40 cattle.
Wow. It's all petting zoos, right? You're not, like, eating them or anything, right?
Of course not. Of course not.
Not, yeah. Right, not cool. While they're walking around, but I've got,
oh, okay.
I've got 1,000 pounds of beef and pork in the freezer. It's nice just to walk over there and just be like, I'll have this now, thank you.
Mm. Yeah. All right, you guys ready to get back to it?
Yeah.
Reggie, had your little walk around the farm.
I had to hear about this.
Lots of bacon.
All right, so I had sort of a just, and it's not necessarily thought provoking. It's just kind of two different schools, right? So, in a network, say that you're doing centralized management, say with like a Sonar platform, something like that, where Sonar, I know a lot of people are using it for DHCP, right? So you've got a border router that's doing DHCP. And it actually connects to it through the API and controls and does all that stuff. If you do route it at all these other towers, is it better to leave centralized DHCP in one place, right? So Sonar only has to go to one place, and then you just do DHCP relay back to him. Or is it better to have distributed DHCP, right? So in one, your Sonar only, you know, because you can use like this the batcher for DHCP or whatever, so Sonar doesn't get overloaded. If it's pulling from one server, it's only maybe two servers, right? It's controlling two, and it's only got to go to those two. Or is it better to have 30 different DHCP servers that it has to connect to and work with? I was thinking, in my mind, it's better to limit those, right? And then just do DHCP relay back to a centralized. What do you guys think about that?
I'll let you go first.
I remember having this discussion sometime in the past couple months. I don't remember where. Our Slack, Facebook. It wasn't in my real life because nobody else I meet in my real life is capable of having that conversation.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I guess other than when I go to Indiana and meet up with Scott and Justin and those guys. Anyway, back on topic. I was debating what to do, and I think I'm probably going to go more towards the distributed because DHCP as a function is not complicated. Like, how often is your DHCP server broken? Like,
never.
It isn't.
Yeah.
And so my thought is run it off of whatever router, switch, whatever it is that's out there. Because if that router, switch, whatever fails, that customer's down anyway.
Yeah.
So its DHCP isn't going to fail. I mean, it can, but it doesn't. And so actually, I was looking at actually doing both, because there's a lot of people that do DHCP relay in wireless, and this is, you know, I'm looking at it from a DSL perspective as well. For wireless, they'll pass along the MAC address of the CPE, and then the DHCP server always assigns a given IP address to whatever is coming through that CPE. So it's doing DHCP relay, but it's tagging it with the MAC address of the CPE, so then you don't have to, you know, they can still do DHCP as the customer straight up to you, but you don't have to know what their MAC address is and make a reservation and all that stuff. You just mark anything through this CPE. And in DSL, you can mark anything that comes through, you know, this blade port 46, you know, always gets this IP address regardless. So distributed, but still does relay.
Well, I mean, I was thinking about in a standard relay environment, you're going to, in a relay agent will pass back, because I was testing this earlier, right? So it'll pass back and it'll say, hey, it's coming from this subnet, like 192.168.1.0/24. That way the DHCP server ultimately will pass back an IP in that subnet, right? So why do you need to know the MAC address of the client specifically?
If you want Bob always gets IP address 42.
No matter what subnet it happens to land in, he'll always get 42? Or you mean like the entire 192.168.1.42?
Well, in this instance, Bob's CPE, because it passes on its MAC address, that DHCP server has a reservation of sorts for that MAC address. So it ignores everything else that comes through. It just knows Bob CPE MAC this is requesting an IP. So it kicks back Bob's IP address. It's sort of like a standard DHCP reservation, except it's basing it on the MAC address of the CPE.
Are we saying like your radius package that like somewhere else is the DHCP server is doing radius authentication, so it's passing it with the MAC? And
like this would be like a pure DHCP environment.
Okay, so you're just basically saying a reservation, a DHCP reservation.
Yeah,
that's pretty standard.
Well, like, you know, that's part standard, but then, you know, the customer's Netgear router is the one doing the request.
Yeah.
And then the wireless CPE, or in the DSL world, you know, the, you know, DSLAM.
I smell what you're cooking.
We'll do the DSLAM relay to say, hey, you know, here's the port number, here's the MAC address of the, you know, CPE, you know, whatever. So then the DHCP server returns.
That's not option 82, is it? Or am I crazy?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, okay. I remember the number, but it's, you know, I always say we talk about DHCP relay, so that, okay. There's a bunch of companies that have that implemented.
Interesting.
So it's kind of both.
So what do you think about from like, cause I'm going to say Sonar because you are a Sonar customer now. What do you think? Cause I haven't researched it, what their preferred method is, but it seems like they would want as few number of DHCP servers that the system has to maintain as possible. So it seems like they would probably want you to go centralized, right?
Yet, I'm still working through that part of the setup. Entirely my fault, not theirs. I get emails from them once every week or two saying, hey, where you at? And if I respond, I say, I'm busy, come back later. I actually kept my WISPMON install running for a month after they said it was going to get shut off, simply because I was too busy. I believe they actually use the API. They want to use the API directly to the router to do stuff. And what the stuff is, I'm not sure, because I said, no, I'm going to do it this way. And so that's the way I'm going. Because that's the way I do it now, and I get how it works. And Sonar will do it that way. It's just not what they want to do.
Gotcha. So that's, you're driving screws with a hammer. I get it.
Well, I mean, like on their site, they have, yo, here's how you set this up. Like, they'll tell you how to do it. It's just, they want you to do it the other way.
That's much.
And I'm like, I don't have time to reinvent the wheel. I just make you work the same way I work now, so I don't have to learn something new. I have enough going on.
All right. So we're nearing the hour mark. Do you guys have anything else specific you want to say, or are you ready to put a bow on it?
Can I just wanted to ask, so you're using Sonar and DHCP. Since it's a layer 2 network, I understand that, like, you say any request coming in from this port on your DSLAM, I guess, you know, always give this IP. Why not just use PVPoE and then have them use the username and password? This way, if their device changes, you know that, hey, you know, because with the MAC address, you would need the specific... with DHCP, you need a specific MAC address if you're going to do a reservation.
Yeah.
PPPoE, just take anything and give you your PPPoE username, password, and always get the same IP. Yeah.
I think for most people, it's one less thing for the customer to have to do, right, Mike? They could just plug in and it works. They don't have to actually enter a username and password. And with kind of the option 82 thing, it's going to pass back where they're technically coming from, so you'll know who the customer is ahead of time. Is that about right?
Yeah. So, like, my WISP, I actually do triple PoE. For everything, although actually I terminated on my, like, I have the CPE also does NAT and everything, and I make them do everything inside bridge, you know bridge their APs and whatnot. But in the DSL company, they've been the opposite. You know, they're just pure DHCP. Actually, their pure DHCP is in anything you plug in gets a public, so I need to fix that.
But if they plug in their router backwards, like all of a sudden their LAN side is plugged into your interface. Oh, no, you're doing DSL. That can never happen.
Yeah, And I think all the D slams, they do all that filters for what mm-hmm. they allow to come in and stuff like that. But yeah, so then in this DHCP relay setup with either with the wireless CPE or with the D slam, the DHCP server effectively it doesn't care what the MAC address is of the Netgear doing the request. It's looking for MAC address of my wireless CPE or port number of a D slam.
And so
you can plug in your Netgear, and it gets IP 46, and you unplug your Netgear and plug in your Linksys, it gets IP 46, and you can plug your laptop straight in, it gets IP 46.
So on your DSL network, were you saying that if they plug in a switch and then just plug a bunch of devices in, it'll give them a ton of public IPs?
I don't know if I said that.
You seem to imply that, it.
And they have a lot of them. It has a MAC address limit, and so the default profile, I think, is 1, but a lot of customers have it changed to 3, 5, or 10 max. And so then, I'll go into the DSLAM and I'll look and I'll see that, you can see which customer devices you're talking to, not just modems, but what customer devices. I'll see printers and I see Jim's laptop and I'll see Samsung whatever's, and I'm like, this has to change. And it will. It just, that's not the biggest fire I have, so
yeah for sure.
When I change that, I'm also going to IPv6 enable everything, so because IPv6 multiple publics is fine. I'll give you a whole /48 of them. But we're going to limit you to 1v4. And if you don't like it, move to v6.
Fair enough.
Or give me money and we'll give you another one.
All right. So now for the burning question on everybody's mind. Have you seen Deadpool 2 yet?
I haven't seen the first Deadpool.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
Animal,
That's
dude.
What happens when you live on a farm.
That's what happens when I have a Wisp, I run a DSL company, I have an internet exchange, I have a podcast whose Facebook I maintain, and I'm married.
So there's obstacles, and any obstacle you can't overcome becomes an excuse. That sounds like you got a lot of. I've got 2 dogs. I've got 2-3 cats. I've got 2 kids, a wife. I've got a car, a house, and I still went and saw the movie. So it sounds like a bunch of bullshit to me. All right, well, you're dead to me then. What'd you think about it, Dave?
I loved it. Nice to just get completely stupid and immature once in a while.
Hilarious.
And all the jokes that I make are always about balls and buttholes and, all sorts of stupid, perverted, stupid things. And that's what Deadpool's about. So
yeah,
I thought the first one was better. I totally loved the second one. Yeah, but I thought the first one was better. It had more balls and butthole kind of jokes.
Now, other kind of jokes, I went and saw Super Troopers 2 last month.
I saw that too. That was pretty good. That was, wasn't that fully Indiegogo or Kickstarter funded or something?
Not fully, but it was like they wouldn't do it unless they got, $4 million from Indiegogo, and, it was maybe $1 million and they got 4. So then once they said, hey, viewers gave us, these millions, $4 million. Then a studio said, okay, we'll pick up the rest.
It was pretty brilliant. I had a lot of fun on that one too. So are you guys gonna, I'm not even pointing at you, Mike. All right, Dave, are you gonna go see the Solo movie? Put this out there. I'm not a Star Wars fan. I don't like it for the most part, but this was gonna be standalone. Dude, I love Donald Glover. He's the man. He's in there, Childish Gambino. Come on, man.
Look, I'm not a Star Wars fan.
Me neither.
I can appreciate it, okay? I don't like what it's become. It's become just one big money-making franchise. I am a diehard Star Trek TNG fan. I know
TNG.
Yeah, I know every episode. I have the almanac. I mean, that's my love. So you can't be a Star Wars fan and a TNG fan at the same time. So will I see it? I'll probably see it. just to waste some time, you know, I'll wait to watch it on my computer. That's all so I'll say.
I asked somebody who's already seen it, and I said, you know, I don't like Star Wars, but is this a fun standalone movie? And they said, yes. So for that, okay. I'll give it. I'm not saying I will enjoy it, but I'm gonna try it. Probably take my oldest with me because my youngest and my wife have zero interest in going. I just like going to the movies, dude. I love getting the big popcorn. Love getting the big soda.
I would say that my favorite Star Wars is probably Episode One.
Purely Jar Jar Binks. Jar Jar Binks. That's
purely
what it
because
is.
It pisses off everybody who is a diehard. Like, oh my god! Like, you know, some don't even acknowledge the movie exists, and I'm like, that's my favorite.
Yeah, I heard you got a Jar Jar Binks tattoo on your cheeks.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah.
But something I did want to mention. I just posted, I think, on the Facebook last night, maybe. Look, I found a way to fix a problem with Polycom configs, which is awfully generic. Free PBX, 3CX, a few other things. Their default config, a Polycom will accept a SIP packet from anything that comes in. It doesn't restrict it to the server it's talking to by default. And I've come across a lot of routers that the Polycom is making the SIP request, you know, back to the hosted PBX. It's originating it on port 5060 because that's the SIP port. So then the router says, hey, I have nothing else using 5060 right now. That's what I'm going to, you know, do your, you know, NAT source translation on.
So it's UPnP, and it's given 5060 to that device, and so everything comes in unsolicited?
Well, it isn't UPnP because the Polycom isn't requesting that it gets 5060. It just normal devices, you know, when they make an outgoing request, it's just a random port from, you know, 20,000 to 60,000 or whatever. You do a torch on, you know, visiting google.com, and it'll come from port 37952 going to port 443. Polycom just does it from port 5060. It doesn't do it from port 43967.
And then you get roll calls, is that it?
Yes, and so then port 5060 is open on, you know, NATed through on your router, so then anybody scanning for 5060, your desk phone keeps ringing, and it didn't go through the PBX. I found what in the config you set to lock it down to just talking, you know, just accepting SIP from the registered server. And I linked it to it off the Facebook page. I do have to give partial credit, most of the credit to somebody, I think, in the Wisp Talk group, don't remember their name. They gave me the line of the config, so then I went and found the Polycom manual, found what that line actually does, its options, and, you know, I linked to all that. And then I did feature requests in various PBXs to add that. So I'll give them those problems.
Sweet action. All right, Mikey, while we're talking, if people are out on the internet and they want to get a hold of you, how do they do that?
PayPal.
PayPal.com. That's his website. Just hit the contact me button.
You're getting tired of the I'm busy. So if you want to talk to me bad enough, we'll go to PayPal and
write your message on a $10 bill and mail it to him. That's how it is.
No, I'm busy. Leave me alone.
Nah, man, you've still been doing good. So facebook.com/thebrotherswiss, that is Mike for the most part, almost 100%. I'm going to go ahead and say that's Mike. That's so all of the
Or two posts a month could be somebody else.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, right. So most of that stuff that pops out there, all of that good information, all of the news that you're being kept abreast of, that's all Mikey. Any questions that pop in, it's usually him to respond really quickly. So stop acting like you're ignoring people because you're not. Dave, if people want to get a hold of you out on the internet, how do they do that?
Just send me an email, david@pennytone.com. That's it.
Easy peasy. If you want to get a hold of...
I went back. Okay, so there's four posts that are me and then one of Justin Miller. So we have to go back 5 posts to find one that's not me.
Oh, sweet. And before that, it's probably like 30. So there you go.
Yeah, I don't have time to count which the next one is.
Yeah, let me go.
I think Wilson put one up last month.
Ah, sweet action. All right, so if you want to get a hold of me, greg@gregsoul.com, or you just go to gregsoul.com. I got a contact link. I do some consulting-y things sometimes. Let's see, what else? Patreon.com/thebrotherswisp. We actually have a Brothers Wisp only Slack. We call it the Little Brothers, which Dave refuses to join in on, and he needs to get in there. I already sent him a link. He's being a turd. Anyway... get in there. There's a lot of great discourse, a lot of great conversation. I see somebody ask a question and I'll see an answer. It's sort of like this little game where everybody races to try to answer the question. So it's a lot of fun, a lot of thought-provoking stuff. If I wasn't so lazy, I would comb through there more and find little tidbits that we talked about, but I am lazy. So sorry, just balance. Because, you know, I've got the cats and the car and the house, and I just don't have time.
Dude, he's got like 3 million pigs on his ranch or whatever.
Now you're on a ranch. Anyway, questions and comments, please keep them coming. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
I go back 36 more posts, and I get one of yours.
Bye, guys.
Bye.